The single most important thing in all of marketing is first and foremost, organic social media. Then everything else. Social media organic, more important than commercial, more important than your email newsletter, more important than a billboard, more important than hiring Beyonce to be in your Super Bowl spot, more important to anything else. If you are not the best in the world at organic social media, I'm talking cross-platform, I'm talking Snap Spotlight, I'm talking Instagram, I'm talking YouTube proper, YouTube Shorts, I'm talking podcast, I'm talking newsletter, I'm talking for real, for real.
Attention is the number one asset.
This is full circle for me because my dad gifted me Crush It. I want to say 14 years ago, right before I launched The Skinny Confidential, I read it, I highlighted it, I dog-eared it. Then after implementing it, you came to me, I want to say 8 years down the line, and I got to be in your book, Crushing It. And then I was on your show and now we're interviewing you.
It's a weird moment.
It's a family affair.
I was saying how you're like the internet's dad. Like your students or your kids are growing up.
In like a real way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I was at DoorDash yesterday. This kid's 32. He came up to me at a Super Bowl party. I stopped by yesterday when I was in San Francisco. And he's like, you and I had a call when I was 14. I cold emailed you in Hong Kong and said, can I speak to you about entrepreneurship? You said yes. I'm really good at remembering shit, like really good. Especially not names, but visuals and moments. I couldn't recall it. I don't like bullshitting. I couldn't recall it. This dude's like, actually the full story was at a Super Bowl party this year at Michael Rubin's Fanatic Super Bowl party, the bougie one. Like this kid comes up, this woman comes up to me, excuse me, his wife, and goes, you need to meet someone. I'm like, of course. She's like, tell him the story. He's like, I was 14, Hong Kong. You made me believe in entrepreneurship all the way through. And then she goes, this is the co-founder of DoorDash. And like, and we were hanging out yesterday, we were chopping it up. And like, you know, not only, I'm in a very wild part of my career, like watching all of you, like really when you've been putting out as much content about what you thought would happen and then it happened and it's impacting so many people and it's positive and you get to be in the airports or literally on the way here, like we're working on the VeeFriends theme song and music for the cartoons that are coming out and the music group. The team that brought them in, they're like, they're the hottest, they're the best, they're winning, they've done all these shows. And then they start the meeting with, Gary, our company took off because we read your book. And the people that introduced us didn't even know that. It's like, I'm in this incredible period because I'm still young, right? I'm still like in my journey. Yet, to your point, I've been on this kick for 15 years and a lot of people that were like 19 are now 34, and they, you know, 28 are now 43. Like, and then like watching y'all and so many others who I know a book or a video changed the course of their careers. God, it's humbling beyond belief.
I think what stands out for me is that that book was so different than anything that was on the market.
Especially then.
It was so avant-garde and it was like the discipline and the hard work and putting in the reps and the consistency. And it's like, it is all the things that happened.
And the thesis, people will become famous and build businesses around the things they're interested in at scale. And people shit on me heavy when that book came out. It came out in 2009. I wrote it in 2008. This is like 15 years ago now.
That was when we were getting out of school.
How did you have a nose for that? Looking back, because now you have the perspective.
It was, you know how some, like, I don't know, like, why does he have such great hair and so fucking handsome? Like, you're born with shit. I'm born with some sort of ability. I don't know. Like, I'm born with some sort of ability to have a very good sense of what people are going to do before they understand they're even going to do it. I've always been good at that. It's how I built my dad's wine store. I knew that Australian and New Zealand wines were going to get hot, Spanish wines, and like nobody in the wine industry saw it. Like, I'm very good at that. I mean, you think about your careers. You know that I was the loudest on Musical.ly.
And always
that, like this is what I do. There, like, I'm that guy.
There you know? Is, I was look, just think, I told you before we started, like, there were so many places that we could take this interview. We've been so aware of your content and been so critical in our careers and the development. And I was thinking the last time we sat down, it was actually the very first thing I ever did publicly ever was
oh,
your
that's
show.
Right.
He snuck on.
I snuck on.
I forgot.
I don't even know if I was mic'd up.
I fucked
he
it up for you.
He snuck on the show.
I snuck on.
I got invited and Michael was like, no, I'm coming on with you.
I'm going to take the shot, you know, if I can take the shot.
God, but I remember now.
Yeah. I was like, what? And we had matching leather jackets. I'm like,
what's going on? It was a little strange looking.
Yeah, I'm like,
it was,
really?
I found it. It was episode 191 and it was March in 2016. The reason that date's so important is that was the same exact week we launched this show, the very first episode ever. And you played such a critical part because we would drive back and forth to San Diego from LA, San Diego, LA all the time. And we would listen to the Ask Gary Vee show, you and some other guys. And it was like, I remember trying to think, you know, I've always been a kind of an operator behind the scenes guy, but I remember listening to you on that show. I'm like, oh, I like that format. Like I could do that.
You know, it's interesting. I'm an operator. Huh? You know, like the thing that's always been weird about me is that I always love when people come to Vayner, like influencers or other people. We do a lot of that. We're always trying to give love, just like I did with all of, with you. I continue to do that, even at this place in my career, like random 15-minute meeting with some kid that's like, I love it. I love the come up, right? And the amount of people that come into VaynerMedia and are like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, what is this? I'm like, this is my company, VaynerMedia. They're like, huh? Like the amount of people that think like I'm an influencer or a personality or a motivational speaker or an author, like the reason operators always fuck with me is because I'm an operator.
The second part of what I was going to tell you, which is it was a real moment in my life personally, was I read the book with Lauren and I started talking a lot. And it was a lot of talk. And I'm like, wait a minute. I came and saw you in your office and you talk. But what people don't realize about you is what you actually do most of the time is operate massive businesses all over the place. And that's your main, like the thing people see is the side thing. And I saw that with you and I was like, okay,
that
shut the fuck up more. Go do the thing. Yes, you can talk along the way about the thing, but go do the thing actually. And it was a moment, like as a young guy, I was looking around. There's all sorts of people on the internet. And it's like, who do you listen to? And I remember like you were the North Star. I was like, oh, this guy you can listen to because he actually is doing the thing when a lot of people are talking about the thing, but not actually
doing
it.
It's why VaynerMedia has become one of the largest independent agencies in the world. Literally 15 years ago, I started VaynerMedia. I was in the wine retail business running my dad's wine store. And in 15 short years, we've built a 2,000 person global agency for Procter & Gamble and Pepsi and Fanatics. Like we're it. Like I was just in Miami at PossibleCon. Like everyone knows in advertising, the Mad Men, like the people that do the advertising for BMW and for the Gap and for Exxon, like the biggest, that world, everyone knows they're on call that I'm coming to get them. And the reason we're winning is that now that social media organic creative is the starting point of marketing, organic social media, the reason I wrote Day Trading Attention, which is the follow-up to Jab, 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 Right Hook. The reason I wrote it is because as we sit here today, the single most important thing in all of marketing is first and foremost, organic social media. Then everything else.
Go off on that.
Well, the reason to even have a podcast is more about the clips for organic social than the podcast itself. Like I literally did Daily V and I did Ask Gary V and Daily V for the social media clips, not for the long form. I even still do podcasts as a guest because Dustin's sitting right there de-rocking it and we're going to clip it and there's going to be three or four or seven things. Social media organic, more important than commercial, more important than your email newsletter, more important than a billboard, more important than hiring Beyonce to be in your Super Bowl spot, big shout out Verizon, more important to anything else. If you are not the best in the world at organic social media, and the way I define that, as because I know you two have been paying attention for a long time, is I'm one of the few humans that equally has 5 million followers on LinkedIn as I have 15 million followers on TikTok. I'm talking cross-platform. I'm talking YouTube Shorts. I'm talking Snap Spotlight. I'm talking Instagram. I'm talking YouTube proper, YouTube Shorts. I'm talking podcast. I'm talking newsletter. I'm talking for real, for real. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's just a fun time to be on this show because you were saying right before, you're so sweet. Like, I love you guys. Like, you're like, what's a win for you, Gary? I said, whatever's best for your audience right now, right? And you said, our audience is starting to figure out that like everyone could be an influencer. And I said, fuck, man, you couldn't even imagine how that hit for me. I'm like, I fucking sat and wrote this book in 2008. And I wish you knew how nobody believed me. Not my publisher, not my ghostwriter. Not the audience. People, shit, go look at the Amazon reviews when I first put this out. Literally people wrote things like, this snake oil salesman's trying to tell you you're gonna make $100,000 a year on YouTube. What a joke. Think about what a joke that comment is now.
I think people, they're scared of the unknown, and it was the unknown. And what I like about you personally is that you always go for the unknown. Everyone is so scared of the uncertainty and the unknown and what they don't know, and they don't like it and they fear it, so they hit against
it. They don't like change either.
Right. And then other things that happen, especially for influencers and creators, is they get good at something and they want to hold on. The reason so many people fucked up the TikTok moment was they got a million followers on Instagram and they wanted to stay there because it felt cozy, because their ego liked the blue check mark and the million followers. So they didn't start setting up shop on TikTok because they didn't want to start at zero. I get fired up to start at zero. I'm pumped. Like, you know, like, it's true. Like, I love having 60 people watching me on Twitch right now while I stream from my office on mute because everything is private information. And all my friends.
Wait,
and
how many people are watching?
60. Like, I'm just putting it on to test. 42. Like, 28. Like, you know, but could I get more? Sure. As Dustin knows, like, if I go on Instagram Live for 2 seconds and say, come over here, then it's 400. But like, I'm not Clicks. I'm not Booga. I'm not Kai Cenat. I'm not Aiden Ross. I don't have the time right now to sit in front and stream for 15 hours a day. Do I think I could do that well? I sure do. I think I can gab with audience for 15 straight hours and crush. But that's not in the cards for me right now. I'm operating. I'm building an enormously big IP called VFriends, and I'm building the biggest advertising agency in the world. Yeah, I'm busy.
And that, so when I saw that as a full circle moment, I was like, oh, okay, there's a way to do this long form content and go and speak and do all the things that we all do, but you can still be a great operator. And correct. And this just reinforces the main thing. But, and you know, there's a lot of people out there selling a lot of stuff, I'm sure, you know, yes. And, you know, get rich quick schemes and what to do. And I'm like, if they're just selling you on the idea that like they're selling you on something and they don't have the actual infrastructure, like, you gotta be really careful.
My biggest argument in marketing right now, there's a lot of marketing professors and pontificators. I'm like, if you're so good, why doesn't your book sell?
Uh-huh. Mm.
Like, this, you know, to your point, get rich quick. We all know that that's played out. Yep. Like, people still get away with it, but like, people are getting smarter to that, and they're not as loud and as noisy as they used to be.
Yeah.
It smells. There's something that smells about it.
More importantly, it's just a simple question. Like, if you're so good at marketing, why doesn't your shit sell?
Right.
Like every author that writes a marketing book that the book doesn't crush is a weird situation. Like,
nice if you're way of saying, right?
Like, if you're supposed to be so good at marketing, why doesn't your book sell?
What would you say to someone? I can't wait to hear what you would say to someone that says, I'm too busy to create content. Because you have 60 million companies. I'm looking at this list. Guys, I'm gonna read it in the beginning of this episode. It's gonna take half the episode.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Please go off on what you would say to someone. I'm too busy to create content.
You don't believe in demand creation.
What does that mean?
You don't believe that creating new customers or consideration for what you're doing is important.
So they just want to appeal to who they have?
Do you know companies that are really great at sales, what they're also bad at marketing and branding? If you're a sales organization, that means it's not coming to you.
You're going out.
You're going out and hunting.
Right.
I love sales. And I love when companies do both.
Yes.
But if you're only about sales, it means you don't know how to market and brand. Because when you know how to market and brand, it comes to you. Mm-hmm. Right? So when I hear that, I'm like, oh, that person doesn't understand that content on social networks in April of 2024 is the single most important thing in the world to do great, to get people to come to you versus you go chasing it. They're too busy oftentimes operating and selling, when if they understood that branding and marketing would accomplish the selling and free up time to operate. VaynerMedia doesn't even do RFPs anymore. This is very nerdy marketing talk, the request for proposal. We don't do it. We don't need to. Give me the business because you know we're the best. That's a good game. It's a lot more fun when you go out to the club when it's coming to you versus you running after it.
Yeah, because it's not. There's no desperate energy.
No shit.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny too?
That's what you want. By the way, that's what you want with men.
Of course.
That's what you want when you're being chased as a woman.
Of course.
Come to me, bitch.
Of course.
You know what, too? I also, like, personally, I think Lauren and I both realize we're really bad at the sell.
Me too. By the way, I don't like selling either.
No, I don't like it.
I really don't like it. It's why I like marketing and branding so much.
Yeah, I like
it. Think about what just happened in the meta here. Gary, what would be a win for you? Let me do branding. Let me bring value to the audience. Then, of course, they're going to want to buy the kids' book. Then, of course, they're going to want to buy. Like, I don't want to. What am I going to say? Buy my book? Like, no shit. Like when people go do the Today Show or a podcast, like when they, I'm like, what the fuck are they doing? No, the audience, what do you think? Nobody understands, like you go do a podcast, you have a new book coming out. What do you think they want to happen? Of course you'd want your book to do well. For me, my book's going to do well. There's no scenario where my book is not going to do well.
And why is that? And how is that from a micro level? Like, how do you look at it? When you are ready to launch a book, how do you look at it as opposed to other
people?
I look
at it at this point as, do I have something to say that's going to create more of you too? The reason day trading intention is fun for me, and I don't know if you've gotten to skim it or read it yet.
Yeah.
Okay. It's because even you two that are winning, there's real shit in there that you don't
know. Oh, yeah.
No, for sure.
By the way, I have all your books. It's not just this book. It's all your books.
Well, that's it.
Anyone can open your book and highlight.
I write books on the concept of marketing and branding and the current world that are good for even the people at the highest levels, which then, of course, is going to matter for the people that are just starting out, which was the waitress you.
Yeah.
I write books that both will crush for you when you were waitressing and crush for you right now in the midst of you building your empire. And you know how epic that is for me?
You also don't write books for money.
Well, sure, but that's... But sure.
I think it doesn't feel like that.
Of course not. It's not enough money in it for me.
Right. But it seems like you do it because you...
I want to be historically correct.
You also
and I want to impact. To me, $1 billion is intoxicating. You two looking at me with the admiration through your four eyes is the intoxication. Admiration is $1 trillion.
Has it changed over this two decades? It's always been the same.
It's always been the same.
It's always been the same.
It's always been the same. My favorite people to interact with are the kids I grew up with that knew me for real. Everyone now is like young, oh, Gary, you're not, it's different now because you got the money. I'm like, you don't know me. You don't know 27-year-old me that was exactly this person making $61,000 a year.
Well, I do want to say something else to you.
Please.
We've been swimming in the same waters for a long time now. And with that, and you know this too, you get to meet a lot of people and everybody talks and everybody knows each other.
Yes.
And not only do we know people that you've partnered with, but we know people that have worked with you and for you.
Yes.
And
Sam Heaps.
Of all these years, I've never heard anyone say a bad word about
you. She just sang your praises today.
And I mean that as a real compliment.
Yeah. I mean, it's how I live my life. I couldn't imagine Dustin, Lara, Sam Heaps, D-Rock, and by the way, even sometimes when people leave when it's a little murky, maybe I wasn't candorous enough. That's why I wrote 12 and a half to talk about the only kryptonite I think I've had in people relationships was I wasn't candorous enough to some people.
What is candorous?
I couldn't deliver candor. I couldn't be like, hey, Dustin, I need you to do that. Like, if I love you, but Gary Vee is the most candorous.
Yeah.
On stage, in a podcast, in book form, crush candor. Gary Vaynerchuk, if I like you, and you're not doing a great job at work, I dance around it.
Huh. So how does that then, what do you think the impact of that is?
It created sloppy exits. 99.9% of people are gonna say remarkable things about me. The 0.1 that could be like, I couldn't tell them they stunk and I surprised them when I fired them. And so I have resentment towards me. Hmm. And so that stings because what you just said, that what you just delivered is everything to me. The way people that actually know me, actually spend time with me, actually talk about me means the world to me.
But I think it's important because again, like coming up and figuring this out and it's very fast paced and there's a lot going on, especially in this world. Like, I don't think especially a lot of young people starting here, they don't realize like this can span decades, especially if you're building something on a personal brand and you have to not only protect the business, but you have to protect your reputation and the way you are with people because you never know becomes the executive.
What you're alluding to is a lot of people look up to a lot of people, but 88% of them are pieces of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And people are hypocrites and they talk about being nice on camera and then everybody works for them, hates them.
Yeah.
That's where you meet some people.
And you know, once you get in the circles, you get to the truth.
Well, and you podcast with someone that you think is
the best.
And you see the way they treat people in the office or the way they treat their audience. And you're like,
it's devastating. Never meet your heroes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Agreed.
I mean, some are great.
Agreed.
Some are great.
88% versus 12% is a disappointing thing for all of us. Well, I'm disappointed too. Like,
even
I'm a human.
The creator side, right? You start to see people that like are starting to kind of make it and they're getting the traction. And then all of a sudden they start to like believe their own hype.
What is humility? Is the missing ingredient for almost everyone because most people are grounded in insecurity versus actual confidence.
Talk about that.
Well, like the reason I think I'm nice is because I'm confident. It's not super complicated. Most people have bad behavior from their own insecurities.
Where do you think that comes from with you? Because
the luck of the DNA drawn, epic parenting. My mom crushed it, but I also know that I have siblings and cousins and friends, and I have children. I see how the world works. It's not just parenting. It's not just environment. Like, I got very fortunate that it was part of my DNA, and then it got reinforced by a mother who really believed in kindness, who instilled that I was the best, so I believed her, but not that bullshit delusional, you're the best. You're the best, she told me, son. But then when I did things wrong, consequences. Modern parenting has fucked up. That's why I wrote Meet Me in the Middle. If you tell your kids they're the best, that's awesome. If that becomes delusion and you don't have ramifications and consequences for their poor behavior, then they become delusional.
Of entitled, delusional. It's a fine line.
Yes, the entitlement in our society in first world countries like America, parts of Western Europe, rich China and other places is a fucking cancer.
Do you get pushback at all at this point in your career? Like, we did an episode one time on hustle culture, and it was like a hot button issue. And, you know, our perspective is you got to put in the fucking work. Like, you have
to. Yeah, I think, you know, what happened there in my career was somebody wrote a Medium article called Hustle Porn and put me as the
person. I didn't even know if they did that. That happened.
And so what happened was there was a moment there that it got a lot of heat, and I started to, but it was easy for me. Two things happened with that. One, the most remarkable thing was I talked about it once on a podcast, and because there were so many things that weren't true about me in the article, and I said that I felt bad for the person that wrote it, not for me. And then that person reached out to me recently, and I sent it to Sid and Andy because it was a big moment on our team, Gary, at the time, and he apologized and said I was right on the podcast.
I didn't even know that happened.
He used me. And then, so for me, that's what actually sparked people throwing me into that convo, because if you read Crush It, I don't talk about working 18 hours a day. I talk about having the capacity to work 18 hours a day when it's your hobby. When you love it, do you understand that I would not work 1 hour a day if I didn't like it? I got D's and F's for a reason. I did not like school. And I believe that I'm part of a very rare club. As a matter of fact, Gary@vfriends.com, if you're part of this club, because I know there's not that many people, so I don't think my inbox will get flooded. Don't email me otherwise. Please, I got too much email. But if you're one of these people, email me. Are you part of the, I never opened my book, I never did a single piece of homework, and I never studied for an hour or more in your entire 4 years of high school? Please email me, because you and I are part of a, I am an all-time remarkably poor student. From freshman year to high school at North Hunterdon High School in New Jersey, I did not do one piece of homework in 4 years of high school. I never submitted a book report. I did my Scantron as A, B, C, D, E, like complete random. And I never studied once, not an hour, in 4 years of high school. My capacity to work hard when I don't like it is zero. My job, my career is my hobby. I treat working the way people treat skiing and vacationing and cooking and watching Star Wars and playing video games. It is my great hobby. So when people tried to throw the hustle thing at me, I was like, the receipts exist. Go watch my content. I don't work 18 hours a day to make $1 million for what?
So the real message is that if you can turn your work into something you absolutely love that becomes your hobby, then it doesn't feel like work. So you're not really you're hustling, but you're not really anyway because it feels
fun. People are like, Gary, work late. I just said this on another podcast. First time I ever said this way, I'm late. They're like, yeah, but Gary, I work 9 to 5. I have great work-life balance. I'm like, do you like your job? Nah. I'm like, you don't have good work-life balance. You have 40 hours a week that you are fucking miserable.
I also disagree. You do have to hustle. Like, do people disagree that people are mad about that?
We are fully agreeing. That becomes, let me tell you what that's about. That's similar to why cancel culture is getting canceled. That was the manipulation of a word. When the word hustle meant hard work, we all agreed on it. What happened was society manipulated the word hustle into work so hard in such an unhealthy manner that you will get sick or suicidal, all for the chase of money.
Yes.
My definition of hustle is hard work is one of the ingredients to make something happen. That'd be like saying to everyone, good news, you don't need to go to the gym or eat right and everything is going to be awesome. Physically, not true.
Sure.
So that was just the slang word of hustle. This is the biggest issue with cancel culture. It doesn't factor in intent.
Yep.
Somebody makes a misstep, but they didn't want to, and they like you, and they didn't mean it. Why should they be fired and eliminated from society? It was so out of whack, which is why it didn't last long. There's a reason we're having a correction and why it was just a blip. It's not sustainable. It's not right.
Yeah. It's why, like, honestly, we never, I mean, and again, and I think it comes with having, like, a lot of people in that moment were maybe new or just getting started finding their foot. We've been doing this for so long now, not as long as you, but that it felt like a blip in time.
100%.
And I kept looking like, there's no way you can sustain this way. And people would get frustrated that we wouldn't take it more seriously. But I'm like, it's not something.
You not allowed to, by the way, I stopped using hustle during that time and just used hard work. Yeah. And work ethic.
Just
you want to cancel work ethic? Knock yourself. I don't give a shit what they want to cancel. It has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with life right now. Everyone has such audacity that they think everyone should see the world the way they see it.
Oh, please.
I have deep conviction of how I see things. I'm me. I'm Gary Vee. I write these. But when I tell you, I totally understand why people don't see it the same way. I have conviction that organic social media is the single most important starting point to marketing. I equally spend my career 7 hours, 10 hours a day, because I split it between VeeFriends and Vayner, with people who think a TV commercial is the most important thing. I think I'm right. I think they're stuck in yesterday. But guess what? I'm not mad at them. I don't hate them. I don't think they're stupid. I think they'll be proven to be wrong. I don't think in 2024, spending $4 million on making a commercial for television on a non-streaming service on network TV or cable is a good idea. I think it's actually the stupidest idea. But I'm not mad at anyone if they see it differently.
What's a bad day look like for you?
One of the things I'm struggling with right now is that with 2,000 employees, and I'm so HR driven, the pet team, the people and talent team, always tell me when something bad has happened to an employee anywhere. This is a big part of me wanting to be the human CEO I am, to the point where I'm actually debating maybe not doing it anymore. Because now at 2,000, when it was 50 people, 80 people, and everybody was 22, we were cruising. Nobody's parents were dying. Everyone was 22. Nobody's parents were dying. Nobody lost a baby. Nobody had kids. Like, we were cruising. I was like, I'm the best. Meaning I'd have to hear about it once every few months and I would lean in. Now at 2,000 people, many of which are 40, 50, 30, things happen. People's siblings die. People's parents die. People lose a baby. People get sick. People themselves get sick and hurt. We had an incredible teammate get murdered. In Brazil, I think, Colombia. So the weight of a day-to-day negative thing of people I care about that work with me, heavy. So a bad day for me would be getting bad news about somebody in one of my companies that's happened to them, because I'm very emotional. And so I take things on. I'm able to compartmentalize. That's what I'm great at. I can deal with it. But I would tell you, my bad days are only left for cancer, death, terminal illness, car wreck, burnt house down, losing money, somebody saying I stink. Like, fuck that shit.
I want you to talk about that a bit, because you've said that for a very long time. And I think a lot of people starting out with that perspective, you know, some people get it, as we've become parents and been married and all this, I really like lean into like same theory. Like if something happened to her or my kids, like that's a real thing.
You look, you're in
losing a little money.
Even let's go to the full extreme. You guys are really in it right now. You're on the precipice of building your empire, right? What if it went to dead zero tomorrow? Devastating. You've worked really hard.
I'd figure it out.
Of course. That.
Have to have that. You have to have that. You can't be scared.
You know why? Because you have no choice.
Right.
Like, I don't understand. People think they have optionality to step backs. Everyone's so scared of losing, they've lost. Everybody is so scared of losing that is listening to this right now, that they've already lost because of the fear of losing.
What about the forever student?
Oh, right. Like they just read about it and never do about it. Yeah. I mean, they're the forever student. Like, I don't know. Like I was that about health and wellness from 28 to 38. I was talking to myself for a decade about, I have to get into better shape. I have to eat better. Fuck. I have all these goals and dreams. I'm not going to live to 100 if I keep eating foie gras and fucking never go to the gym. And then at 38 and a half, I finally got serious about it, and I've started taking my health more serious over the last 10 years of my life. That's how I feel about all of it. I understand the forever student. I was it with my health and wellness from 28 to 38. It's about fear. I used to say when I was 34 that I didn't have time to work out. 34-year-old Gary compared to 48-year-old Gary with time, that guy is a puss.
Why is he a fuss?
It's not that I work that much more or less. My efficiency is like a fucking gangster. Do you know what my calendar looks like?
No, can we see it?
Yeah.
This is my dream. This is actually my dream to see your calendar.
This calendar, watch this. My calendar is super early. And look at this, 15 minutes, 40 minutes, 30 minutes. There's no lunch. There's no.
You've always done it this way, yeah?
Uh-huh. You guys know, like 4:45 to 5, 5:15 to 5:30, 4:30 to 4. Like it is.
Wait, do you have something in there that says 4:45 to 4:46?
Yeah, it's very real to me. Like shower in there. My efficiency, me learning as an operator that every one hour, here's a big one for all the entrepreneurs out there. Every hour meeting you have is actually a 30-minute meeting.
Please, can you actually talk about that from a very detailed standpoint? Yes. I need all these tips.
The reason I have so many 15-minute meetings is almost every 30-minute meeting is actually a 15-minute meeting, but you putz around on dumb shit that doesn't matter or pleasantries that aren't required at that moment.
Like, I'm so excited. This is great. How do you
stop? And like eating the pineapple for a few minutes and like making a coffee and all of a sudden it's like 2:09. Here's my favorite one. 13 people in a meeting. Let's do intros for a fucking hour.
No.
I mean, like, fuck that shit.
No. I give you an example. I was speaking to some banks the other day and they were trying to schedule hours every time. Like, no, 30. Because the point is like, on the hour, everyone does the round of introductions. How was the weekend? And you also lose momentum in the conversation. It's like, let's just get to the point.
How do you hard
need?
Stop it,
It's like
it,
going
though.
To the gym for an hour, but not doing a single exercise properly.
You don't have to hard stop it because people get to the point.
I want to know how you get out of 12 to 12:15. Someone's still talking. What do you do?
Say, I apologize. I have to go to my next meeting.
Just straight up.
You're also in my role as I'm the conductor of almost every meeting. Like everyone, don't forget. It's also scheduled from 12 to 12:15.
People see it.
People know, right? Okay. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
they show up ready.
Yeah, like, I'm bad at interrupting when I'm the podcast host. I'm definitely going to interrupt in a meeting if we're trying to move shit along.
So like, you're like, sorry, I have to go to my next meeting. Bye.
I mean, it's even weirder than that, I think, back to the point I'm making, which is if this meeting is 12 to 12:15, at 12:13, everyone's brains is like, this meeting's 2 minutes long. Like, there's no, like, it's not like someone's going to pontificate about anything. Like, I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to take those 15-minute meeting tips. And it also, what I like about seeing your calendar, too, is you can tell you've also carved out time that's personal.
Yes, of course. Now, I don't do a whole lot of personal between, like, 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Like, I'm, like, a minimum day for me is 10 hours of operating, no lunch. I barely go to the bathroom. It's 10 hours, right? Right? Every day. And by the way, that's the minimum. There's plenty of 8 a.m.s to 11 p.m. and all that. Listen, I love what I do, but I'm in or I'm out. Like on the weekends, I'm see ya. Vacations, see ya. Jets game, double see ya. Like you could tell me the world's burning down. I'm like, this game's not over yet. You know, like, I carve out that time and I've definitely evolved in an ebbs and flows with your personal life of like, there's times where you could triple down on work. There's times like you find different variables in different chapters of your life. There's no, I also have no ideology to my work ethic. Like I'm also comfortable changing my mind tomorrow and never working again. It's a fluid situation. Like it is what it is. I focus on one thing, enjoyment, satisfaction, happiness. And currently this is working, but if it changes, it changes.
So when people come to you at this point, and you've talked to thousands of people and they say, Gary, I'm not happy with what I'm doing. I don't like my bid. I'm, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have passion. Like what is the main theme that you're recognizing with those people? And what is the response to them?
Lack of accountability or optimism. And they're looking for answers, but often what they're looking for is affirmation for their excuses. And the reason they like me is I don't want to do that for them because everyone else is doing that for them and it's fucking them up. What most people want is for you to agree to why they got unlucky or why it's not going well. If you look carefully at what's happening, a lot of us are creating entitlement and nepotism for people we love by acknowledging things that aren't true. Like for example, the thing that's really playing out in society right now is the real pandemic is non-accountability, right? So right now you have an entire, let's just use our country for a little bit. It's Biden's fault. It's Trump's fault. It's Republicans' fault. It's Democrats' fault. It's my spouse's fault. It's mom. Now the other big one, it's mom's fault. It's dad's fault. It's everyone's fault. What about this? Like the thing that I'm usually trying to be, like usually where I go, depending on the tone and tenor of the person. You know, some people love a gym trainer that like really grinds you. Like, you know, like people like that. Other people like one that's a little bit more like your therapist slash trainer. Everybody likes different things from different relationships. What I tend to try to do is look at the person that's coming at me, whether randomly at an airport or somebody I really care about, and be like, what style of communication can I give right now that brings them the most value? For some people, it's like, look, that's real trauma. Like somebody comes to me that I don't know. And like, this happens to me a lot. Like that, I don't know them, but they consume my content. And I'm like, in line to get a coffee, and they're like, Gary, can I speak to you? I'm like, you know, I'm pretty me, I'm me. Yeah. I'm like, sure. They're like, look, man, like my dad was an alcoholic and like sexually abused me. I can't be like, yo, bro, who gives a fuck? Like, that's not appropriate. You need to come with real compassion in that moment. That's something I can't fully understand. I'm not all knowing. I'm like, to me, that needs extreme sympathy and passion, but, and compassion. But if that's a 45 minute convo, not a 1 minute convo, then at some point the story with that person, especially if it's the 18, it's, let's say it's an employee and I'm in hour 18 over 3 years with them. At some point in that convo, it starts to transition into like, you are aware that other people have also gone through this traumatic experience and through therapy, meditation, health and wellness, mentally and emotionally, physically, they've been able to get on the other side. Humans are remarkable. Now, how you start that conversation isn't always like, rah, 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 I got you. Sometimes it takes 4 hours of compassion before you can start to transition the energy to accountability and capability. But the issue, you know, what do I say? You're capable. You don't like, politics is such a hot topic, right? You don't like what's going on in America? Go to Sweden. I don't know. Like if you're so distraught right now listening to this and you think America's the worst, I have great news. Australia is lovely.
Yeah.
And so to me, why are you going to complain when you're in control? Ah, you like that feeling. People don't want to be accountable.
I think complaining gives people sometimes an identity.
It gives them a short-term endorphin hit. It gives them a short-term excuse. It gives them a band-aid. It gives them a jolt of, I don't suck. This is, life is as basic as it comes. Insecurity, self-confidence, everything else is secondary.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because like the message is very clear and I couldn't agree more, but you know, there's also this thing where it's like, well, easy for you to say Gary V, point of privilege, Lorna Michael, point of privilege. And like, it's just like, it's another bump along the road.
Only because they don't have context.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Sure, easy for me, Gary. Let's talk about Gary. Go. I immigrated from the Soviet Union. I grew up in a household where my dad worked every minute, where my mom, starting, who's the greatest of all time, but very early on said, you take care of your sister. I've only had responsibility. I've only had stress and pressure on my head my whole life. Started working my dad's liquor store at 14. At 16, I'm already a financial impact on the business. Now I've got that. Like, I've only had, and I've never had a vacation in my fucking life. How about that? I didn't take one as a kid. And by the time I was grown and I went, every vacation I've ever taken in my entire adult life, I've had to think about responsibilities that were happening while I was on the fucking beach. So I promise you, I wasn't on fucking vacation.
Yeah, that's one
so
thing.
So thank you. Enjoy. Like, fuck you. How about you, fourth kid in your family, never had the responsibility. Everyone took care of you in the fucking family. You got it good.
You're the oldest, right?
Yeah. Yes. Like, fuck that shit. Like, as if nobody else has, like, everybody has something. Everybody has something. The thought that I have it, like the thought that other people have it better than me, that is stupid. Why would anyone think that? You don't know about people's lives. You know how many people have had atrocious things happen that they've never had the strength to say out loud? Nobody on earth knows. Everyone's walking around with secrets. Everyone has skeletons. Everyone has trauma. Everyone has pain. Like, no, I don't think it's a point of privilege. Plus, what are we defining as success?
That's the thing.
The stupidest fucking thing I know on earth is that people define people of privilege with money. Money has no correlation to happiness. You know, you guys are grown now and you're in circles. You know, unlimited amount of people.
More people we know with money are more unhappy than people we know with less.
100%. And by the way, you don't know yet. You'll find out if you get there. And if you don't get there, you won't know. Like, I don't know. Like, am I supposed to think LeBron's lucky because he's a fucking athletic freak? I know that I wasn't born as an athletic freak, but I don't know what's going on in LeBron's life. Like, I'm supposed to believe that Beyonce has it so fucking awesome? I don't know what's going on in Beyonce's life.
how are you going to teach your kids this? I want to know for my own, like, what are you doing that you, and this book too, you could talk about this as well. Like, what are you doing for your kids?
You're just having conversations, but don't forget, I'm not going to be the best vessel. Like, there's different vessels. I'm going to be my kid's dad.
Right.
I'm definitely not going to be Gary Vee.
Right.
I might be very effective for your kids.
Right.
By the way, I might be the perfect person for your kids one day. You'll be like, this is somebody we knew for a long time. They're going to think they may think I'm cool. It's happening right now. For so many of my friends, they're 15 to 20 year old. The amount of texts I get from friends saying, my son just texted me a fucking video from you.
Oh.
That I've been telling him for 9 years, but he hasn't listened, but he texted me and be like, dad, we should do this. You're like, motherfucker, I've been telling you this. Because sometimes you need an outside voice. Sometimes Oprah did it for people. Even though mom was saying it the whole time, I can't be that. I'm going to be dad for my kids.
Yeah.
What am I telling them? I'm doing dad shit. But I also know that dad shit's only going to be 50% of it because people, humans, when they grow up, dad, mom can only have so much leverage on them. So I can do dad shit there. I try to do dad shit for the internet, older brother
shit. No, you're
shit.
The godfather.
You know, like
the godfather of the internet.
You know, like I try to do it. I try to leave positive contributions. And then I'm also okay if I'm not the right vessel.
Yeah.
I'm going to be very calm. If for the people, like I'm comfortable. I mean, my sister and I are very close. She always laughs because people know my brother. I talk about more because I usually talk about business. As you two know, I don't talk about my personal life.
Yeah.
Not a lot. Yeah.
So usually my sister's always like, nobody knows. And we always have my
Your sister's the middle.
Yeah. And I grew up with my sister much more than I grew up with AJ.
How much younger is AJ?
11 years. I went to college. AJ was 7. So I was also like a 18 going on 11 and he was 7 going on 17. So we've always met in the middle. Mm-hmm. But you know, my sister, I have a real fun relationship with. We're incredibly close. And like, she's like,
what's the gap?
3.5. We grew up together. And like, we grew up different than AJ. AJ had a little bit better because I came to the wine store and blew it the fuck up. Let's just call it what it is. So we grew up, we have different stories. We have our childhood together.
You said something so smart though. You said on your Instagram that the way that you look at giving the kids the internet is you want to instill self-confidence into
them. You're talking about it. Yeah, I'll get to that in a minute. Let me finish this thought.
Go.
My sister even like had an epiphany with me in the last 5 years. Like the way she viewed me, my dad, like mom, like, and that's like somebody I grew up like. So like what I'm trying to say is that like I'm humble enough to know that for some people, like there's people listening right now that I was literally the guy for. Literally. I was the single human being. Many people come up to me and say, you are my true father figure. You are my true big brother figure. It's humbling. I know that I have the gift of gab like many billions of people have. I don't think that makes me special. There's many other people right now on the internet, pro, left, right, everybody, people hit with it. Music, musicians, right? Like fucking, what do you think? Like it's so fascinating to watch like who inspires, who breaks through, who gets through your fucking head.
That is something I think you're born with.
Like it's a communication concept, right? So I'm happy with that, but I'm also okay when I'm not. Many people also come up to me, most people don't have the guts for this, but some people come up to me occasionally and be like, I don't buy your shit. I'm like, okay. I'm like, first of all, I'm not selling you anything, not asking anything of you. And two, like, that's awesome. Like, I get it. Like, maybe I'm too high energy. You don't like the cursing. You don't like competitiveness. That's amazing. I'm glad that a different kind of voice resonates for you. Like, usually when I'm met with that, normally on DM or comments, rarely in person, but when I'm met with it in person, I always tell them like, I hope you do find the person that hits for you. For me, that was my mom. It was never Joe Namath. It was never Jay-Z. Like for me, the person that broke through was my mom.
I think the people that call you out like that, though, want your attention. And when you give them the attention, they immediately back down and say, sorry, I've seen it happen.
Yeah, of course. And that's fine too. And I'm empathetic to
that.
They
just want to be acknowledged.
Yeah, of course. I get it. Listen, I live with compassion and sympathy and empathy running through my blood.
Yeah.
It is my natural state. It's how I see the world. I'm so grateful and humbled by the luck of the draw of my DNA and parenting and circumstance. If I was born here and not in Russia, I'd be a different person. I lived in a studio apartment. I remember living in a studio apartment in Queens, the size of this room, with more family members than are in the room right now. 6 in the room now. Do you understand how grateful I am to be able to have a nice dinner? Red Lobster on my 10th birthday was like going to fucking Europe. I wore a suit from Kmart that my mom bought for fucking $8 for my 11th or 10th birthday because we went to Red Lobster. I went to two family vacations in my entire life, both to Disney World. The first time we stayed in the Holiday Inn, not the fucking where Mickey Mouse is. We stayed in the fucking Holiday Inn. How the fuck am I not going to be grateful for everything? I was fortunate to grow up that way. And every time I had nothing, I was always happy. So of course I live a life realizing money's not happiness. We didn't have it, and I was the happiest. Now I'm around unlimited people with unlimited money, and they're fucking miserable. You think I'm confused? I'm definitely not confused.
What do you think the common denominator is that makes those people with the money unhappy? What do you think that is? Like, what happens to those people?
They're insecure, and they thought money was going to close the gap.
Yeah.
They thought the pretty girl was going to close the gap. They thought the watch was going to close the gap. They thought the handbag was going to close the gap. They thought the zip code 90210 was going to close the gap. They thought the followers were going to close the gap. They thought the blue check mark was going to close the gap. They thought the Grammy was going to close the gap. They thought the BMW, they thought something with nothing's going to, no thing is going to fucking close your gap. If you are emotionally insecure, you are vulnerable. And oftentimes the person that made you insecure was either your mom or dad, which is a whole brain fuck.
So say, like, in your scenario, and I think in our scenarios, we were all fortunate enough to have parents that, like, really instilled a lot of confidence and told us we could do whatever we put our minds to. So, and so we kind of had that. But for someone who didn't grow up with that and has those things, how do you help them get there?
Find people that do it for you or content that does it for you. I watched my father, who did not have self-esteem being built into him, transform under his time being with me at the liquor store. I'm proud to sit here and say I had a dramatic emotional impact on my father.
And how did he manifest?
I didn't know that. I've never heard you talk about that.
Because I don't talk. I'm trying to give you something nobody else has. Here you go.
Yeah, tell us about that.
I'll tell you. I believe, I've never said it because it's not really for me to say, but I feel like my father's and I relationship is at the right place for me to say this. I believe that if my father was sitting here, he would tell you that the 22-year-old kid that came full-time to work in that store, and really 6 years earlier than that, that over the course of me being with him so much between 14 years old and 34, that I fundamentally changed the way he viewed himself.
And how do you think you did that for him?
By telling him the truth.
What do you mean telling him the truth?
By when we drove to the liquor store and I could see my dad didn't realize how remarkable what he had done was.
Yeah.
I'm like, Dad, do you know how many people come to America with $100? Like, he was shitting on himself. He spent all his time and energy on what was going wrong. I was like, what about this? By changing his perspective. Dustin, do you believe that I've had a positive impact on your perspective? I know who Dustin was when he started.
That's no surprise. I think anyone that's in your orbit, I mean, we know D-Rock too.
D-Rock would sit here right now and be like, I had a profound change. Like, yes.
But I think I'm surprised because I have a similar dynamic with my dad that you had that kind of impact on your dad, well, because that's a different kind of impact.
That's a different one. It was, you know, look, I think it is more unusual for the child to do that for the parent. But I also think I'm a supernova of positivity. Like, I think I'm different. I think I'm passionate about it. Back then, I didn't even know what I was doing. Now I'm aware that I am that person. Then it was just, I was a child. It's the purest form. Like, I don't know how not to look at everything from a positive, practical way.
Did your dad- Did your dad and you, was there ever a strange dynamic when your dad had obviously laid the foundation and built so much, but then you kind of came in and rip-roared it and took it to the next. Was there ever like a weird dynamic of him looking at you being like, my son is now like proud of you, obviously, because of everything, but also surpassing, you know,
We could do a whole fucking documentary on it. We went from a place of where my father and I competed with each other and had weird dynamics about it to a part in our life now where he literally walks around Earth every day with a hat that says, proud dad of Gary Vee.
Sweet. Yeah.
And he brings up something I said to him all the time.
So
this is his favorite thing to say.
Oh.
Well, it's not that cute. I love it. But he also has two other children. I prefer my dad mix it up a little bit. But like, my dad always brings this up. He brought it up yesterday when I spoke to him in between meetings in San Francisco. He said, son, it's really nice. I said something to my dad one day when we were driving. And it was about how Wine Library was going to be the biggest wine store in New Jersey. And I said, Dad, I'm going to build such a big wine store for you. And I'm going to be so good at it that everyone's going to stop competing with us because they're going to all know that they're fighting for second place. That I'm going to be so good, and this is going to be so good, and I'm going to build the biggest thing and everyone's going to be fighting for second place. Because what my dad used to be worried about is what you guys are giving me flowers for. While I was building Wine Library, I was telling the industry in interviews what I was doing. I was like, the internet's going to win and email market. And he would get upset. He'd be like, don't tell everyone your secrets. And I would say, Dad, you don't understand. I'm so much better than them. I'm going to tell them what I'm doing, but they're not going to execute on it. And it was this like really gangster moment when I was like 24, 3 or whatever, that like was a real, I remember it vividly the second I said it. It was like, ooh, it was like a, you know, like a, it was being like a rapper where you have a bar that you just know you're going to be known for forever. And it was just me and him. We used to compete a lot. It was a real challenge because I was building the business and I would struggle with him coming in and being like, I'm like, Dad, I'm doing it now.
But he's like, technically like the owner and
but
the
he's
boss.
Like, fuck, man. Like at the time, I didn't understand. When I was 22, full-time back from college now, don't forget, I was there since I was 14. So I've been there every summer in high school and college. Like I was there 100 days a year. But now I'm there 365 days a year. When I was 22, my dad was 44. 4 years younger than I am now.
Whoa.
It's weird.
That's a trip.
And so I was like at the time at 22, I'd be like, Dad, like, you're good. I mean, the thought, like I'm 48. I think I said earlier, I'm just starting. so, you know, for my dad, it was, you know, he was thrilled because the business went from 4 to 10 to 17 to 25 to 30. Like I fucking annihilated it. Changed the course of our
lives.
You
brought it online, right? Is that like
brought it online? Okay. That was the whole punchline. But he lost his identity as the man. And I didn't want him micromanaging because I'm like, I'm fucking giving up my fucking 20s for you. Because I also had my own resentment. I didn't own any piece of the business and he wasn't paying me a lot. I love when people are like, don't listen to Gary Vee. He inherited a winery. I'm like, okay, let's start from the top. It's a wine store in New Jersey. I inherited nothing. And as a matter of fact, there are very few people on earth that will give 150 hours a week for 12 straight years, give up their entire childhood, all their fun of their 20s, and work every day to build a business for their parents. Very few. I sit in very rare air. When people try to razz me at don't listen to this guy, I'm like, you don't know. You're complimenting me because I sit on an island with very few other human beings.
It's interesting to watch you and know you for as long as we've known you, though. When you talk about your parents, you get very emotional.
I do.
And I look at it as like still to this day, making your parents proud is probably one of the biggest driving factors in your life.
100%. And not only is that true, I just love them different, you know?
Well, that's what I was saying. Like my dad's 80 now, and we talk about this, and Lauren's lost a parent. And when you start to think, oh, you're going to lose this business, you're going to have a business, that, like all that stuff, in it pales in comparison. Like when I think about losing my dad, or, and I'll get emotional if I think too much, or with her or losing her, like that's the stuff that like—
Oh, dude, it's why I'm happy all the time.
And it's why—
Bro, it's why I'm constantly happy.
Because you have that, yeah.
Yeah, because if I woke up today and nothing, like when I tell you, like even looking at my phone after this interview, I'm only looking for one thing. Is everyone good?
Yeah.
My life is so simple. In all the complexity, right? The 800, like everyone's like, he's so crazy. I'm like, I'm the simplest. I'm the simplest of them all.
You're grounded in the perspective of the things that are really important, and the other stuff is the game.
Of course I have micro concerns. Of course I'm in the game, right? It's like being a competitor. It's like, you know, like when you're playing basketball and like you're like, I'm me, like I'm in it, but like not real life. I'm detached from it. That's why, by the way, that's why I'm so pumped about Meet Me in the Middle.
Yeah, talk about Meet Me in the Middle.
I believe every parent that's listening to this, that buys this and reads it to their kids is also going to be affected by it. I am going to build a BeFriends world. BeFriends is Pokemon meets Sesame Street. Obviously, the NFT thing got every, like with the hype and everything, but it started there, but it's an omni brand, cartoons, toys, trade. If you go to eBay right now, please do this. Please go to eBay right now and type in BeFriends and go to completed auctions. You'll be blown away. Trading cards and Squishmallow. It's like, I'm built, like, by the way, back to like, I'm doing it again. When I was Gary V, but I was really building VaynerMedia. Right now I'm VaynerMedia and Gary Vee, but what I'm building is like literally the next Marvel Pokemon. Like I can't wait for everyone in 20 years to be like, and I'm doing it right. I'm doing it. Like I'm telling them I'm doing it right now. And yet back to like, I told my dad, no one's going to do it or no one's going to see it. Even though I'm telling you that I'm building one of the biggest intellectual properties of all time, people don't believe you, and that's okay. And by the way, I might not.
You don't think people believe you at this point?
Still no.
Still no.
Still no.
Maybe
if,
people.
If people believe me, everybody would run out and buy you. How many V Friends Series 1 NFTs do you have?
Yeah, Michael. How many
V Friends? I don't have any V Friends Series 1 NFTs.
Okay, so let me.
But
I don't have any. No, no,
that's okay. That's okay.
But listen, I don't have any NFTs.
That's right. Comma. If you believe that I was building one of the biggest intellectual properties of all time,
I should have gone in.
And you would know that you should go after this interview and go to OpenSea and buy a V Friends Series 1 because that will be the ultimate collectible. That would be like comic book number one. So no, I don't believe that people.
You have to go buy it now that he just said it.
I'm sure the price has gone up.
No, but no. Actually, it's a great time in NFT land. Everyone's confused about NFTs. NFTs are forever, but everybody thinks NFTs are Beanie Babies. NFTs are stuffed animals. Only 1% of NFTs are going to be good.
Let me ask you, like, this is the wrong analogy.
Go ahead.
I was explaining. Someone was asking about and talking about this, and I said, okay, if you look at the watch market. There's certain periods. There's people that love watches. You may put zero value. Another person may put $1 million.
Correct.
Value.
What about art?
Yeah,
there's people that buy $8 million pieces of art. I'm like, I don't even want a poster.
Yeah.
What about sneakers? The thing that everyone just thinks that NFTs are all art, all watches. 1% of watches are worth money.
Yep.
1% of trading. You know how many trading cards have been made in the last 100 years? Gadrillions. But Michael Jordan's rookie card's worth a lot of money. What people got confused about is they coupled all NFTs into one thing. Everybody was confused. Not all NFTs are going to be worth money. The 1% of NFTs are going to be worth money because they're going to be digital collectible art and collectibles. VFriend Series 1 is something I'm going to try to make people give a shit about. If they start by reading about Patient Pig when they're 5, by the time they think Patient Pig is cool, as they go up the ladder into comic books and animation and anime and movies and toys and collectibles and trading cards, that made them bring them to the ultimate collectible, which is the first one, the VFriends Series 1.
Now I better get on OpenSea.
How do you have the energy every day? What are the wellness and self-care? No one asks you this. I know
I
you
sleep
do.
A lot.
Okay. Are you like juice? Like, what are we doing here?
Nope.
Nothing.
I actually don't consume a whole lot. Like
coffee?
Yeah, I like coffee.
Okay.
But I'm very funny with coffee. It's like full cup, drink a third of it, throw it out, it gets cold. Like right, Dust? Like I'll probably get through one or two cups of coffee a day, but I have like nine. They're always there. You know, it's funny, back to childhood. I always had tea because I'm a Russian family. We always had tea around constantly. Constantly. There was always tea. Got home from school, 3 o'clock in the morning. Want tea? Tea. Not like water. Like tea was a big thing in Russian culture. Russian tea room, like that kind of stuff. So I think something happened that's like comfort for me. I always need a hot beverage around me. There are times when I have full cups of coffee and tea. I don't even take one sip. The concept of it being there is warming to me. So yes, I drink coffee, but no, I think my big ones are sleep's huge. That was why I always laugh when people are like, Gary's gonna get you burnt out. I'm like, I'm the one fucking tell everybody I'm sleeping 7, 8, 9 hours a day. I've never been like there's moments to sleep 4 hours. Like if you have a big project coming out, when VFriends was going, I was fucking not sleeping a lot. Like, I was in it. Yep. But that's a couple weeks. Like, I sleep a lot, but I have... The reason I'm good is I have deep peace of mind. I'm not anxious.
So,
like, everyone's like, I'm going to cold plunge, and I'm going to ground, and I'm going to meditate, and I'm going to Joe Dispenza, and I'm going to do all this
Lauren?
Stuff.
You talking about Lauren?
Yeah, and Mona. Like and everyone. And everyone.
And Mona,
And everyone.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, I just already know.
So there's no like healthy breakfast. There's no workout you do every day.
I work out every day.
Electrolyte water.
I want to talk about this for a second.
I have no idea what that even means.
In one of the
I've heard of electrolyte water, but if you told me for $1 billion, Gary, tell us what electrolytes is. I'm like,
in one of the rare moments.
Some marketing thing they came up with to sell more water.
There's one thing you haven't done for us yet, and that is play couples therapist. And what I tell Lauren all the time, because, you know, similar to Mona, she's always telling me to prime with all these 18 things. And what I say to her sometimes is like, I'm
good. Well, you've clearly been doing, unlike me, you've definitely been doing the face stuff.
I've been doing
the face stuff.
I do a lot of the stuff.
Because you're vain. He loves his beauty.
He loves his beauty.
Listen, I'm quarter Japanese.
He's a quarter Japanese. He loves his beauty.
You're right. You're fucking sick.
So, there's the Manscaper. There's the colostrum serum.
But I will say with some things, though, I'm like, listen, I just already feel good and feel happy.
Yeah,
and don't
he is
need
more
to do
like
the 18
like that.
Things that, like, to
my
get
My favorite
there.
Thing on earth he is when more. I'm working and Mona's reading something and she'll get excited about something. And she's like, da-da-da. And she's like, wait a minute. You're already like that.
Like I wake up.
What do you mean?
I wake up.
On the physical things, like I will be very wrinkly like my dad. I've never done a single thing for my face and I'm so animated. I will be a wrinkle monster.
Lauren will give you an ice roller.
I'm gonna give you an ice roller.
I don't give a shit. but so the physical stuff, look, I definitely work out. I'm eating so much better. I eat better now because Mona took me to, it's not a calories game. It's a clean game. So I'm putting better stuff in my food, in my body. Yes. I'm talking about the mental game. The mental game is the game.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Though.
The mental game is perspective. Like the mental game is self-esteem. The mental game is ready. The mental game is very simple. I'll save a lot of people a lot of time and energy.
Go.
Do you value other people's opinions more than you value your opinion of yourself?
A lot of people do.
I know.
So,
and I'm telling everyone,
don't
do that.
how, what are some tangible things that they can do?
Don't do that sounds easy, but for a lot of people, very hard.
Everyone's different. For some people, it is years of deep therapy. For other people, it's meditation. But I believe the secret to what I'm saying is grounded in one thing. How much negative or positive information are you consuming? If you are somebody right now who struggles with those insecurities, I believe the formula has to do with your consumption of information. Who is in your ears? What is in front of your eyes? People love to shit on social media. Do you know that I can't find a single positive thing on mainstream media?
Can't find a positive thing on mainstream media.
That's right.
Of course.
Go read any newspaper, any magazine, any television show, radio show. It's all negative.
People gave us a lot of shit. We said we don't have cable television in the house anymore because that.
I also don't watch people's Instagram story. I star only positive content. You're on my star. You can pick and choose and curate what you want to see. I don't buy it.
My fucking content is rainbows and sunshine and the Knicks and the Jets and garage sale and
right.
Like
happy things.
Happy things. Social media exposed us. It didn't change us. And I can find unlimited positive shit. I'm so grateful for social. There are people like you out there. You don't get airtime on CNN or Fox. It's too positive. You're not selling fear. You're not selling rubbernecking.
So they need to be mindful about what they're consuming.
I believe that that is the point. And I think that starts actually in a very close place, not on your phone and not on your TV. I think it starts with your relationships.
Right.
I believe there are many people that should get divorced.
Yeah.
That aren't because their spouse is super negative and they're dragging them down. I think that before you do that, couples therapy, there's other things to do. I'm hoping not people are like, well, okay,
you're gonna pull that one clip. Yeah,
don't do that. Don't take me out of context. But I believe a lot of people have parents that are 70 that have been negative all 40 years of their childhood and life. And I don't think they should talk to that. If your mom is extremely negative and you talk to your mom 4 times a day because you're trying to rehabilitate your mom, you only have so much energy. And you're 40 now. I think you should talk to your mom 2x a week instead of 4 times a day. And you should reallocate those hours to maybe your positive husband, to maybe your positive oldest son, to maybe a positive podcast. What you consume dictates what you think. It's why the world's changing so fast right now. There's so many new voices, so many new thoughts, so many different thoughts. It's why the world is changing. I believe the way that people get into a better mental place is by consuming practical optimism, not delusional. I remember when The Secret came out, everybody kind of like misunderstood that book. They were like, if I just sit on my couch and pray for money, I'll get money. I'm like, I didn't read the book, but I was like, I have a funny feeling that's not what the book says. No, practical optimism. I talk about a lot of optimistic things, but it requires action. When you read the new book.
I know, tell us about that.
Day trading attention's hard. It's like, when people hear me talk about like, lots of content and this, and you have to know how YouTube Shorts works for it's hard. Same with what we're talking about now. It's hard to tell your mom who you've been enabling for 40 years that you need to cut her out a little bit. I don't mean cancel your mom. I mean, regulate. It's hard to quit a job that pays you $200,000 a year without knowing your next job, but your boss and your coworkers are so toxic, it's been draining you for 8 years. I don't think that's easy. Not when you have a mortgage. Now, when you have college bills coming up, but I can tell you it's the answer of how to get happier.
The point is it all starts with you, and you have to take extreme accountability for your own life and look around and really look at the content you're consuming, look who you're around, and actually say you have the power.
There's not one person's excuse that I'm willing to listen to for a sustained time. I'll be there for compassion up front, but eventually we're going to have to talk about what are you going to do about it. My friends, there's a lot of you doing this. Listen, if you're listening right now and you're 35 to 65, I'm going wide. You're in the era of where you have to stop blaming your parents for everything. Here's
why.
You're
younger.
Yeah. And look what I'm doing. I'm being very empathetic. I'm starting just at 35. Yeah.
I'm That's like, old though.
I get it, brother. And I'm with you, but I'm going to be incredibly compassionate. Okay. If you're 35 to, forget about the 25, 28 year olds. You're still kind of like, most people on earth, 35 to 65, continue to blame their parents for what hasn't worked out. And what I'm saying to them in the middle of this podcast is, hey, it's time to let that go and ask yourself, what are you going to do about it? Because let me give you an insight. Your parents, they had parents too. And I love that you love Grandma Fran, but Grandma Fran's the one who fucked up your mom for you to be mad at your mom. And oh, by the way, before we shit on Grandma Fran, I don't know if you know about great Grandma Gertrude, but she fucked up Grandma Fran. And so like this lack of compassion or empathy for our parents who also got fucked up, and this inability to be accountable for our ability to fix our fucked up, like you have generational shit, be the one that stops it. Or just be a contributor to the shit that's bothered you your whole life. Either you're a part of it, or you break it.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. You mentioned your dad was 44 when you guys were working together. And I think about now having kids of my own. My mom was 22 when she had, she's like 22, like, and you're blaming these.
Fucking child.
Yeah,
she doesn't know what she's doing.
You're blaming these people.
I was on the bar with my tits out at 22. Yeah. Jesus, still, you're fucking lucky that your mom was like even responsible.
You still kind of are. No, but
that's why he likes you.
Yeah, of course. To think, I went to that bar. To think that like we're blaming people that were that age and they were in many cases younger than us for all of our problems later in life is crazy to me.
And you combine that with where we are now with entitlement at scale where we think that everyone should see the world the way we see it. When you guys moved from LA to Texas.
Oh God.
Oh God is right. Yeah. I am so sure. I remember hearing that, you know, either from Mona or seeing it. I'm like, oh, these poor two are about to get so much judgment from so many, because you did it a little bit earlier, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, everyone's allowed to do, like, I don't understand the audacity of thinking your opinions on other people's lives are like right.
Oh yeah, we got lots of shit.
Or like, just think about, I mean, we've done
it. Same people reach out and ask me how I like it and which neighborhood to live in.
At this point now, we're approaching,
It's always
800 of these. And we've had people here and here, sides of the political spectrum. And it's so funny because we have somebody on the right, people get really flustered. We have someone on the left, they get really flustered. I'm like, listen, we just want to listen to people and understand what makes them tick.
Look, meet me in the middle, and day trading attention is purple for a reason. I'm obsessed right now with purple. I'm so tired of red and blue.
I think most are.
It's such horseshit.
Purple's royal.
It is.
Purple is royal.
I also think the other thing really bothers me the most about the extreme red and blue of our society? We lost civility in it.
Oh, yeah.
We're just so nasty. And politicians are to blame. I'm so upset with our politicians. Their lack of civility towards each other completely trickled down.
I think
it's such a shame.
We have to get to a point too where people are able to change their mind.
Well, that's for damn sure.
Like we get so stuck in the mud in the opinion. You have to be able to evolve your opinion.
I'm pumped when I change my mind.
It's amazing.
I love it.
I mean,
it's growth.
There's no room to change your mind anymore.
You know what the scary part is? People change their minds on things to be fully red and blue. I've watched friends in my circle. By the way, on the record, I don't judge my friends that are red or blue. Yeah. I really don't.
Yeah,
I'm super purple. And I'm like, because I'm purple, I'm like, I get it. I don't like that. Like I voted for both parties in my whole life. Like I'm like pretty fucking purple.
I just hate the idea of like having to pick a side without knowing what the issues are.
Well, the part that really fucked me up was like 5-6 years ago when it was really starting to get full momentum. I was like, oh, people are changing their minds to be red or blue.
Yeah.
I literally watch people change their mind on abortion or gun control or big issues. I know them. I'm like, I know what you've thought about this. I'm like, wait, you feel the peer pressure to be fully one or the other? That was sad. The extremities pulled everybody in. We'll go back. By the way, the 1960s were like this. Like, it ebbs and flows. It ebbs and flows. Side note, always believe in people.
Think about how many bad business decisions were made because of that as well.
Oh, God. Like, look, business to me is a whole different game.
You're a media guy.
Well, here's my thing. Everyone now asking their businesses to be political is the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Please go off on that.
You know, I want you to go off on this because
businesses are not capable of it.
Of course.
Businesses don't have the luxury of what media, governments, teachers, academia, like, businesses have to either live or die. It's merit. Businesses are like sports. Like, businesses have thousands of employees that see it both ways. What would you like them to do?
I want to speak on Texas.
It's crazy.
Running this company, half Texas, half LA, during the pandemic.
Well, you're in fake Texas. Austin is not necessarily
fake Texas.
Real Texas, that's people true. Will look at this and say, this isn't Texas.
Exactly.
But it was funny because you're like, half the company says, if you do this thing, we're out. The other half of the company saying, if you don't do this thing, we're out. And I'm like, guys, like,
I'm like, everyone, my point of view is like, everyone should be out. I'll start all over. I'm not. How can you appease everyone?
Carson knows we've done it. I sat down and said, listen, if you guys are like, if people got to go, they got to go. I can't micromanage everyone's personal life.
And by the way, I also am empathetic to everyone.
Of course.
I get it. But like, anyway, listen, back to Meet Me in the Middle real quick. Because I really know there's a lot of young parents here and I'm pumped because I think a lot of them will pick this book up. My favorite part is when they read it to their kids, they're going to have their own ahas.
We're going to read it tonight to our kids.
That's not the real one, is it?
We don't have the real one.
We don't. No, we got to get the real one.
You have the fake cover one.
We got the fake cover.
Yeah, it's not out yet. I don't even have it. I was like, fuck, how'd you get it? I don't even know what the fuck's in it. Oh, wait.
There is stuff in it.
Oh, it is the real one?
Can't
oh, fuck, I want that. Anyway, like.
I'm so excited to read it to my kids.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll buy it. Day trading.
How many? 1,000?
We'll buy it.
And give
we'll
them to all your listeners? We'll, or like,
buy, we'll
40,000?
Buy a bunch of the listeners. 40,000. What are these
How many listeners do you have?
What are these books? Hopefully not 40,000. we have 100 listeners. No, just kidding.
Good.
We could do a giveaway.
I'm kidding.
We could do a giveaway.
No, we could do.
I'm really genuinely
that
joking.
That actually could be fun.
I'm genuinely joking.
If
go
want,
ahead. I'm not joking. Buy 5,000.
No.
All right, here we go.
Day trading attention, how to actually build brand and sales in the new social media world. What can people who are listening expect? What value are they going to extract?
Whether they're a creator on day 7 of being a beauty influencer or they're the CMO of Coca-Cola.
Okay.
This is the modern Bible on how to be as good as possible at marketing. I believe this has a dark horse chance of being the signature book. I don't know what the signature book of TV advertising was in 1968 when TV had just passed radio.
You're like Ogilvy on advertising?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what it is. I don't want to speak as if I do. My hope when I wrote it, and I think it has a 5% chance, because it's hard to pull off what I'm about to say, but this book has the potential to be the true Bible blueprint architect for the next 5 years of like social media marketing, which I believe is by far now the most important form of marketing and advertising. And so I wrote it with the intent that if you are literally doing 100,000 a year selling nail polish because you're making good TikToks, I can win for you. If you're the CMO of Coca-Cola or BMW, I can win for you. And the most interesting crowd, you too. They're now, unlike when I wrote Crush It, even unlike when I wrote Jab, 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 there are a lot of people that actually know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
I wanted to write a book for even that set that, like, I just know that you two, and you're in it, and I'm watching you from afar, and I know what's going on. Like, when you really read it, you'll be like, fuck, we're not doing that. Or shit, that's why our fucking...
I already found 5 things I'm not doing.
You know what's really? So funny?
Yeah.
You mentioned that.
I also think that, like, you get comfortable. You even said it. You get comfortable on one platform, and you want to settle in, and you want to get cozy. I constantly want to be challenging my perspective and my point of view. And you always seem to do that for me throughout your books.
Thank you. I'm also in a great place in my career right now. Not only am I still Gary Vee who wrote Crush and all that, but now VaynerX is huge. We're 2,000 people. It's global, right? Like, we're huge in Asia. We're huge in LATAM. We're huge in Europe. We're big. We're spending billions of dollars in media on behalf of clients in social.
Spend more with your media, but
you know what I mean? Like we're going back and forth. I mean, look at it. But we are really, really in it, and I'm at the helm of that. So it's almost like my dream of what I wanted to do, which was if I'm the emperor, like in Star Wars, of social media, if I build the Death Star, VaynerMedia, that can point at anything and blow it up, and that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years quietly.
And you know what I would say, like, on a smaller scale, sometimes we go and speak to students at schools and mostly get brought in to talk about like this whole world we all now live in, because a lot of students, they're just not taught in school, right?
Of course.
And I at my stage in my career, I'm looking for books. Like, what do you read that's relevant? And
It's hard to find.
But this is very relevant to—
Ready for this? So I think in the shower like a son of a bitch. Like, it's my single favorite place to think. But I also take very fast showers. So I have like blitzes of like 4 minute like thinking.
Okay.
Literally this morning in the hotel, I was like, oh fuck, I need to get serious. Cause I knew I was doing today a bunch of book stuff. I was like, fuck, I need to get serious with college professors. This is the curriculum book. This is the curriculum.
Yeah,
I did a great job with that on maybe Jab Jab. One of my books I went ham on. Thank you. I don't remember. This is the one I'm supposed to do.
I love this from like any stage. And even for Lauren and I, we will get value from this now. And there's not a lot of people you can go to that know their shit in this space. Does that make sense?
100%.
Like, you can read about a lot of great executives, but they haven't done it in this
way. And even me, who's putting out a lot of good content every day to help everyone good, a book, I can really sit down and like nail it, because you're getting clips of me, hot takes, quick thoughts. But I was able to go platform by platform. I mean, for example, you two would explode on LinkedIn organically.
Oh, you're right.
Organic clips of this podcast on LinkedIn would fucking crush.
Taylor, you listen to that?
Like, and that's not something I think is top of mind. Like, that's not how people are thinking. Like, this kind of podcast on LinkedIn, what are you talking about, Gary? Yes, because there's a lot of attention on it. There's a lot of young professionals on it. And some people don't like social media. So the only place you can fucking find them is LinkedIn. I'm platform agnostic. I can't wait to be on this show in 20 years and say, you guys are still doing social media? Like, I don't give a fuck about social media.
Be the next thing.
I give a fuck about attention. Where's the attention? And one day that's going to be in VR or AR or some shit we don't even know. This just, by the way, if I wrote books in the early part of my career, I would have had a book called Email is King.
Right.
I would have been like searching for search.
Right.
You know, I would have been like doing like websites are wonders.
AdWords for days.
Yeah.
I'm putting it out there that one day, could be in 10 years, but I'm putting out positivity that Skinny Confidential is going to hire Vayner for my product line.
I love it.
I'm putting it out there. Gary V, thank you for taking the time. Thank you.
Love you guys.
I'm going to do a TikTok with you for 2 minutes. I want to make sure I'm fitted into your schedule. Go watch my TikTok. Where can everyone buy your book, your kids' book? Where can they find you, all the things?
If I have not accomplished that yet, then I've done a bad job. I think everyone listening to this is going to be very capable of finding whatever they want to find.
Good.
So I appreciate you for that, but okay. I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay. One of my last things to say, you just reminded me, favorite things you ever said, one time someone asked you a question, you said G-O-O-G.
I used to use that as a good shtick in my keynotes. I was like, because I would talk, you know, I was realizing when I was giving talks, I'd be like, you know, like, I'm like, okay, what you got to do on LinkedIn? And people are like, well, how do you make newsletters on LinkedIn? I'm like, I got you. I remember the first time I did it, it was a huge crowd. Might have been South by Southwest. I just remember it was a big ass crowd, 10,000, not like 100. And I was just like, all right, everybody take out your pen. I'm like, here we go. G-O-O-G. This is career students. But Gary, how do I run ads on TikTok? If you don't know that you can Google that, then we're in big trouble already.
Forever student.
Forever student.
Thank you, Gary. You're the man.
Thank you.
Love it, brother.
That was amazing.
Hey, everybody. I wanted to say that a new book is coming, a follow-up to Jab, 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 Right Hook, originally called Jab, 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 Left Hook. But I finally captured what I've been doing for the last 20 years as an entrepreneur, as a creator and influencer, as an operator of a marketing company that works with Fortune 5,500 companies, and really the punchline of what I'm seeing in society, which is day trading attention, how to actually build brand and sales in the new social media world. I'm really proud of this book. When I read it, and some of you follow my social enough to see the clips, when I read it in studio, it got so deep, it goes so detailed. It goes macro and micro, as I like to roll. And so if you've not picked up a copy yet, go to GaryVee.com/DTA, which stands for day trading attention. I have a feeling that this book, much like Jab, 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 Right Hook, literally got an email, they just read it, it's 10 years ago. The updated version of the marketing manual for your marketing team. Definitely if you have a social media person that runs your stuff, you need to get a book for them. And definitely the marketers in Fortune 500 for your staff. app and the entrepreneurs and creators and influencers who are trying to build something for themselves. So proud of it. Hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed putting it together. The manual that we are going to give to everybody when they join VaynerMedia to read, and hopefully the manual to the modern marketing world, and especially social media first world. Day trading attention out this May 2024. Pre-order your copy now.